little bit in Colorado. Brassica gentia is also known as Indian brown mustard, so that might be a more familiar name to you. Now, alert members of the audience might note a change in the title. There's now a question mark at the end. When I submitted the abstract, it seemed like, yes, this was a crop that had some promise. After our most recent harvest, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I'd like to acknowledge all of my co-authors who contributed significantly to this work. So I'd like to tell you something about our multidisciplinary work group at Colorado State, why we think brassicas make sense for that part of the country for biofuel, some of the field trial results for the past 3 years, and next step. So Jerry Johnson, I think, is known to many of you. He's really been the leader of organizing this group and moving it forward. He's been a tremendous asset. We have agronomists, weed scientists, some interesting members of our group. We have a mechanical engineer with an engines lab who's able to test things like engine efficiency and emissions. Animal scientist who's been testing meal. Economics, of course, is very essential. And then on the genetic side, especially want to acknowledge Chusong Jung, a former postdoc who did a lot of the work that I will be presenting, and Nicholas Angelbert, a PhD student as well. And the main tangible result of this work group so far has been obtaining a training grant from USDA last year. And this is specifically to train 4 master's students in an interdisciplinary fashion. So we have 4 master's students who recently started in each of these subject areas, but they won't be limited to their focal area. They'll also receive training and experience in all of these areas. There were 3 candidate species a few years ago when we started looking at the possibilities for brassica oilseeds: Brassica gentia, which is Indian brown mustard, carinata, Ethiopian mustard, and camelina. Canola, I should mention, of course, was the reference that we were comparing all of these to. And I'm going to limit my talk, to the most part, to gentia. And one of the reasons these oilseeds make sense is because they fit into the wheat fallow rotation. And in eastern Colorado, for dryland agriculture, wheat is king. And so you need to fit into that. And this is just showing a 3-year timeline where brassica can fit into what for many farmers is just a fallow year. So it, in a way, it's making use of a resource that is not being used now. We also like the fact that brassica oilseeds can be used both on-farm, something like straight vegetable oil, as well as processed for biodiesel. A variety of products, as you know, not just the oil for food or fuel, but also the meal and other co-products. And for myself, as a crop geneticist, there's a lot of variation in the gentias. So for flowering date, seed weight, seed oil content, just about everything we look at, we're able to see a lot of this raw material of variation from which to select. Desirable traits for our part of the country would be, first of all, good emergence. I should mention that the gentia is a spring-planted crop. So we're talking about planting late March up to mid-April. As I mentioned, the life cycle fits the crop rotation. Uniform maturity, non-shattering would be important attributes, insect disease resistance, and tolerance to just about every abiotic stress. Drought, heat, and cold can all occur in our environment. And then, of course, desirable oil profile, because we would like these brassicas to be able to be used either for food or fuel, and certainly the meal to be approved for feeding. Double low, referring to a low glucosinolate content and low erucic acid. So the first year of the study, 2008, we grew 229 total accessions. These were mostly obtained from the USDA GRIN system. Just about 100 were Jinsia, 39 Carinata, 88 Camelina. And we grew these side by side under well-watered and limited irrigation to try to get a sense of their drought tolerance. To make sense in Colorado, these would have to be rain-fed or, at most, very limited irrigation. The advantages we saw with Jinsia were very good emergence, except for a few that had seed dormancy. The maturity was good. It was early enough, for the most part, that things flowered before it got too hot. Relatively drought tolerant, and the oil content, the mean was lower than canola, but some of these were up in the canola range. There were disadvantages, however. Flea beetle damage was pretty serious. We had to treat a couple of times. Aphid damage at other stages. Some of the lines were quite tall, and so we had some stem lodging. And the glucosinolate concentrations were very high. However, there is low glucosinolate germplasm available that could be used to bring that down. These were means for the three species. The top is the irrigated, the bottom is rain-fed. So Jinsia had a favorable days to flower quite a bit earlier than Brassica carinata. Plant height was a little on the tall side, but good biomass, and most importantly, the seed yield, the mean, was higher than the other species. And that was true both irrigated and rain-fed. So the next step, and this is what Xusong Zheng, the postdoc, did, was to cross 38 accessions, which looked the most favorable, to a line called CBJ, which is a double low, low glucosinolate and erucic acid. He made those crosses, and the same with crosses to DZJ, which is a double low line from Russia. So the crosses were made, we developed F2 populations, we planted those out, grew them in Iliff, Colorado, under two moisture regimes, side by side, fully and partially irrigated, and then we took the F3s from those crosses the following year. So here's Iliff up here, it's in the Platte River Valley. We had a large number of entries, 232, most of these were Jinsia, and two occurrences of V1035, which is a Cargill commercial check. Well, what often happens when you want to look at drought tolerance is you get those wet years. So we had an unusually wet year. We didn't see much difference at all between the two treatments, and so the means of four reps will be presented. So we did see ample variation for all the traits we were looking at. The commercial hybrid is the reference point down here. So although the Jinsia mean was less than canola, there were some within those 106 entries which were comparable or better than the canola. Same way with oil. The mean was 36% compared to 44% for canola, but there were some within the Jinsia that reached that level. Glucosinolates, however, were high, and so that would be something that would have to be continued to be worked on. When we looked at heterosis, when we compared the two parents and saw the improvement in the hybrid over the high parent, 20% heterosis with CBJ, 17 with DZJ. Now, that's probably not a significant difference. Anyway, it seemed like a reasonable level of heterosis for a first try of unselected materials. The following year, what we did was to take the 40 best performers from 2009 and plant them again, bigger plots, same location, same experimental setup, And we did have a wet early season, but then it did turn hot and dry mid to late season. So we did have two distinct treatments. And things looked really good. We had a very nice germination and stand. This is grad student Annie Heiliger taking flowering notes. And then as the pod set, it looked like we had a lot of pods, and we were looking forward to a good harvest, but it was kind of disappointing. These are figures in kilograms per hectare. Pounds per acre would be a little bit less than this. So this would be something like maybe 680 pounds per acre, if you think better in those terms. So pretty low. The canola was also low, but we had at least some of the ginseng, which were comparable. Pretty good seed size. Plant height tends to be tall still. Days to flower, pretty good though, right in there, about the same as canola. This was the dry treatment. As far as the degree of stress, there was a reduction in overall yield of 39%. So a pretty good level of drought stress. Pretty low. Some of the ginsengs were about as good as canola. We don't have the oil data yet for this past year. Why were yields so low this past year and even lower than the previous year? This is showing the maximum temperature, with this black line being the max in 2010, the red line in 2009. So we did have quite a few very hot days, both before, during, and after flowering. And that's currently our best hypothesis as to why the yields were so depressed. To see which specific accessions did the best, we calculated a rank sum. So the ranking of these entries in each of the 3 years added together. So a low number is good here. And what was striking is how many of these top 10 or so were from Russia originally. Either the accessions per se, like this JR 009, 002, 006, or in crosses. And this DZJ parent line was also a Russian line. So this was a Russian by Russian. And so that looks like a good source of germplasm, maybe because our semi-arid environment is similar to parts of Russia. Anyway, it's an area we will look at in more detail. So just a summary. We have an active interdisciplinary oilseeds work, or oilseeds group. We've completed 3 years of field trials for ginseng and carinata. We saw reasonable levels of heterosis. The germplasm from Russia, both the accessions and crosses, as I mentioned, had the best performance over 2 years. So we're planning now additional crosses and to try to get some additional accessions from that part of the world. There are studies on engine performance and emissions underway. And looking farther in the future, we would like to have animal feeding trials, economic analysis, environmental assessment, and I address this to you in the audience, we would like to strengthen collaborations, both with domestic and international partners. So if you have an interest in collaborating, if you have access to ginseng germplasm that you're willing to share, I would be very happy to talk to you about that. And finally, I just want to acknowledge our funders. Clean Energy Supercluster is a Colorado State initiative, and we've gotten significant support from Cargill and from USDA. Thank you.
Maybe have time for one question, if there's quickly.
Have you been keeping an eye on pod
shatter? On party? Well, we recognize that it is a problem and that we need to pay attention to that. We've seen that it seems like some of the germplasm from India would be the best source to try to improve that trait. So it is something that would need to be improved to go forward.
Okay, thank you, Ben.